Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Mi'ila Daf Yud. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We continue today's Shiur from the third line from the top of Daf Yud. But before we learn the Gemara, let's glance at the outside margin where one of the features of the Shas Ozer topic headings appears. Topic headings we denote as Nosei, under which we've written Divrei Ula. We will see Ula's teaching, Hanene Mi, one who benefits from Kodshei Kodshim Shenitme'u, from high-level sanctity sacrifices that became defiled, that became Tomei, or Emurei Kodshim Kalim, or he benefits from Kodshim Kalim, from the innards of Kodshim Kalim, Le'achar She'elon, after they were brought onto the top of the Mizbeach, Ukvar Moshlo Bohena'ur, and the fire already took hold of them, Potter. So Ula is saying that in both of these cases, benefit from Kodshei Kodshim that became Tomei, or benefit from the innards of Kodshim Kalim after they have been brought onto the fire of the Mizbeach, he will be exempt. He will not be considered in violation of Mi'ila. The Gemara. Omar Ula, Hakol Moidim. This is a reference to Rav and Reb Yochanan that we saw in our previous Shi'ur that had a machlokis concerning the benefit from Efer HaTapuach, from the ash accumulated on the top of the Mizbeach. Well, they argued over there, they will agree here, She'im Nehene, if one benefited personally from the Besar Kodshei Kodshim Shenitme'u, from the meat of kachim of high-level sanctity sacrifices like an ola, osham, or chatos, even if it's a time, a point in time before Zrikas Adam, and umeimure kachim kalim la'achar shehelon, or one benefited from the innards of kachim kalim after they have been brought onto the mizbeach and put in the fire, the potter, they will be exempt from the mi'ila violation. The Gemara asks Pshita, what Ula is saying here seems to be obvious. My call mafsid. What loss is he causing? In general, the feeling is that Mi'ila is someone who derives unlawful personal benefit from something that's been sanctified, thereby denying the item from its proper destination, its proper use. In most cases, it would involve the benefit from something that ultimately should go to the Kohanim, or it ultimately is to be burnt on the Mizbeach. But in this case, with regard to the Kodshei Kodshim Shenitme'u, they become defiled. They're not fit for anything. And the Emurim Kodshim Kalim, the innards of the Kodshim Kalim that have been put in the fire, their mitzvah has already been performed. So why should you even think that there would be Mi'ila? Why do I need Ula to tell me that there's no Mi'ila violation? The Gemara answers, Mahu Detema, namely, without Ula, I would have thought, Besar Kodshei Kodshim Shenitme'u is lui mitzvas sreifa lekohanim. There is a special mitzvah for this meat to be taken and be burnt by the kohanim. And now someone comes along and uses the meat for his own benefits, so he's short-circuiting that mitzvah. In other words, he's preventing that mitzvah from happening because he's using it for himself. And likewise, Emurei Kodshim Kalim, Iko Mitzvah Lafuchi Betzinura. The innards that were placed in the fire, even though the fire took hold, but still there is an expectation that they'll be stoked in the fire, pushed around in the fire, so that they burn better. That's lahafuchei betzinur, literally to be flipped around, the innards to be flipped over in the fire, with a tzinur as a type of vessel used for maneuvering meat in the fire. So there is still a mitzvah element associated with these two examples, the besar kotshe kotshim, shenitmu, and the emure kotshikalem, even after they're in the fire. And therefore, if I were to come along and derive personal benefit from those things, I'm depriving these mitzvahs from being performed. And therefore, maybe there should be a me'ilah violation. Kamash malandalo ula comes to tell me that there is no me'ilah violation, even though these mitzvahs have been short-circuited. Omar Rava. Let's take note of the arrow that we have to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a Tes Amud Beis notation. That would mean to look back to Tes Amud Beis to find where this quote is coming from. So Rava says, Ha di Omar Mar, that which was stated earlier, Kvar korva chatos yehu liyam hamelach. If you recall, in our previous shiur, we had taken pause on this point to explain that there was a machlokas Rashi and Tosfos when we saw this originally. So, and we pointed out the Tosfos. We tried to emphasize in our previous shiur the Tosfos' approach to this particular line, and it will be borne out through the Gemara itself, as we see very shortly. So, Rava says that statement, that one who is coming to compensate for having benefited unlawfully from earmarked funds for a korban chatos, we had seen in the source that said that if the chatos offering was already offered, then the monies are yehu liyam hamelach, they are to be taken out to be destroyed, literally taken to the Dead Sea, to the Sea of Salt, where the monies will be corroded and destroyed. So Rava says that this teaching of Kvar Korvo Chatos Yehu Liyam HaMelach Hani Mili, this is true to Isyada Le Kami Kapora, where the offender became aware of his Mi'ilo offense from his improper benefit of those monies before the Korban Chatos that he needed to bring was actually offered. However, avol li achar kaporo, if his discovery of his offense and hence need to compensate took place after he already achieved his atonement. So let's just go over the order of events for this case. You have a person who benefited unlawfully from earmarked funds designed for a korban chatos, but he wasn't aware. He went ahead and bought a korban chatos and had it offered. After he offered his korban chatos, it became known to him that he had unlawfully benefited from funds earmarked for a chatos purchase. That's what is meant here, la'achar kapora. He becomes aware very late in the game. What happens with the money that he owes for having derived that benefit? Kiplu linadava. It goes for the purchase of voluntary offerings and not for the yam. It doesn't go to the yam hamelach. My taima, why not? Why doesn't it go to the yam hamelach? The answer is ein mafrishin mitchila leibud. We don't set aside money whose initial setting aside is for destruction. In this last case, since this person doesn't need a korban chatos anymore, what alternative is there, so to speak? Are you going to say that, well, he doesn't need the korban chatos, so the money that he sets aside should be destroyed? Well, his initial setting aside of the money, since his discovery is taking place now after he achieved atonement, he's only now for the first time discovering that he needs to compensate. To say such a thing would be tantamount to setting aside the money for ibud, for destruction. And we don't do that. We can speak about cases where he discovered the need to compensate before the offering of the korban chatos. and according to the Tosis Pshat that we had seen earlier, he didn't bother paying at that point, but he could have paid at that point. He could have used the monies for the purchase of a Korban Chatas. He decided not to, but the initial setting aside of the money there, where he discovered his offense before the offering of the Chatas, so that wasn't a case of Mafrishim Le'ibud. It wasn't set aside for Ibud. It could have been used to buy a Korban Chatas if he didn't bother paying before, and that's already a different story. However, a case where the person already achieved atonement and he would have no need for these monies to be used for the purchase of a Korban Chatas, and his whole discovery of his offense was after his achieving atonement, we can't say under such circumstances that he now sets aside the money to be brought to the Yam HaMelech because of this rule of Ein Mafrishin Li'ibud, or Ein Mafrishin Mitchila Li'ibud, that an initial setting aside of money for compensation to be set out to be destroyed, that we do not say. The Mishnah. Mishnah here has a list of items that are of a sacrificial nature, and the details that actually many of which the halachic ramifications of these cases we have seen time and time again in the last couple of the Mishnayos. So here's another list of sacrifices and what halachas apply to them regarding mi'ilah and other dinim. Ha'komets v'alavoina. The komets is the handful taken off of a meal offering. The lavona is the spice that accompanies many menochas. V'hakteres, the incense offering. U'minchas kohanim, this is a meal offering brought by kohanim. And what's significant about that is that they are put completely in the fire as opposed to a standard meal offering from which a handful is removed and the shirayim, the balance, is eaten by the kohanim. Not so in the case of a mincha brought by kohanim themselves. U'minchas kohen moshiach, this is a daily meal offering brought by the Kohen Godol, called here the Kohen Moshiach, the anointed Kohen. U'minchas nesachim, these are meal offerings that accompany sacrifices. Moyalin bohen mishehukdeshu. Mi'ilah becomes relevant from the point that they are sanctified. Once they're dedicated, orally dedicated. Kitchon bekli, once they're placed in a service vessel, hukshar liposel b'tful yoim uvemuchos kippurim ubalina, they become subject to ruination through contact with a tful yom or a mechus kippurim, or by being left over beyond their time before being processed. We've explained these terms numerous times before, so hence no need for repetition now. V'chayovin olav mishum noiser u'mishum tomei. They will be chayov. There could be a noser violation if they are left over. And tumah. Upigul ein bohen. There is no pigul with regard to this list, the list in this Mishnah of different sacrifices. Unlike the examples that we have seen in previous Mishnayos, why in these cases is there no pigul? Pigul being the violation associated with a korban that was processed with an incorrect mindset regarding time and place. Here, there is no pigul possibility. And the Mishnah explains itself. Zehaklal, the following is the rule. Kol shiyesh lo matirin ein chayovin olav mishum pigul nosar v'tome ad shiakrivu matirin. Those kind of sacrifices that have an element of from which the balance becomes allowed. In other words, there is one element of a sacrifice that is the, we'll say, the catalyst or the causing factor of the balance being allowed. That is something that when that element is offered, so the balance then becomes subject to pigol, nosar, and tomei. The chol she'ein lo matirin, sacrifices that don't have a matir to them, sacrifices that they are themselves offered and there is really no balance that remains of them after they are offered, so they're not a matir of something else, they're not a causative or an allowing factor of something else. Kevan Shekidesh Bekli, once they are sanctified in a service vessel, Chayovin, Olov, Mishul, Noser, V'tomei, the Noser and Tomei offenses become relevant. Upigul, Ein, Ba, they have no Pigul. So as Rashi says, regarding the list in our Mishnah, the Kometz, Lavon, etc., Rashi says, Dehain Atzmon Matirin, they themselves are the Matir. The handful of a meal offering is matir something else. It causes something else to become mutter, but it itself doesn't have a matir. It is the matir of something else. So as such, it fits into what this second point, this Bay's point, is saying. Ein lo matirin. The Kometz, Lavona, Victorus, all of these things don't have something else to be matir them. Therefore, pigol is a type of offense that has no relevance. We turn to Amud Beis. Before learning the Gemara, we have a topic heading on the outside margin, the Nosei. Hamokor, the Gemara will present a Tanaic source, the Tuma Neheges V'chol HaKotshim. The Tuma offense, namely someone who were to, let's say, eat these things in a state of ritual impurity, applies to all items that are sanctified for the Mizbeach. Gam be'elu she'en lahem matirin. Tuma is a relevant problem, a potential offense, even regarding those kind of sacrificial items that don't themselves have an allowing factor. They don't have something that allows them. They themselves are the method of allowing something else, but they themselves don't have a matir. Benigud lepigol. In contrast to Pigol, the Noyeg Rak Bekotshim Sheshla Matirin. Pigol is a type of offense that has relevance only to those sacrifices that themselves have a matir to them. Ukfi Shinumad Mishlomim. And this will be derived from, or as is learned from, the Korban Shlomim. You'll notice in the Gemara, on this Omid, it basically is all of Tanaic material. You have a long framed source, which brings us to the end of the Perek. So that, having this in mind, we continue in the Gemara itself with the opening question, Mino Hanimili, what is the Mokar to say that Tuma has relevance to all kinds of sacrifices, whether they are sacrifices that have a Matir, or sacrifices that things that are offered that themselves don't have a matir, where they themselves might be a matir for something else. The Tana Rabbanan, the Tanaic source, opens up, and we've also added a long question marking where the opening few lines of this source are in effect a question. The question is, Yachol ein chayovun mishum tuma elo bedavar sheyesh matirin? Could it be argued that Tuma, the Tuma offense, the offense of eating sacrificial items in a state of ritual impurity, applies only to those types of sacrifices that have a matir? The din who? Logically, we could actually advance this suggestion as follows. Uma pigul. Mind you, pigul, which is a very severe type of offense, shehu biyadio achas. The severity of pigul is such that you don't have to be aware of a sin beforehand. In other words, a person may have eaten something that was a sacrifice processed with a pigul mindset, and he discovered only afterwards, after he ate it, that he was in violation of eating pigul. So that's called yedio achas. That will be contrasted later on with our expectations regarding tuma, where tuma is not a problem, or is not a machayev of a korban, unless he had been aware before his offense that he was tumei. Pigul, on the other hand, is not like that. Pigul is violated by yedio achas, not with shtei yedios, not with a pre-knowledge and post-knowledge. It's enough that a person becomes aware of his sin of having eaten pigul, even just after he offended, he ate it. The korbano kavu, another element of pigul that shows its severity, is that it has a fixed price sacrifice that when one violates pigul unwittingly, he brings a korban chatas, a chatas behema. And there is no allowance for bringing a cheaper or less expensive type sacrifice, a bird offering or a meal offering, as is the case with tumah. So that this is a stringency, that korbano kavua, it has a fixed price animal offering that he must bring. Velo hutor michlolo, there is no precedent for pigul being allowed, which is in contrast with tumah, where we know that public sacrifices can be offered in a state of tumah. There is no equivalent in the case of pigul, though. So there's no, it's not hutar michlolo, there's no allowance, literally an allowance from the rule of prohibition. By pigul, it is something that's never allowed. And yet, ein chayoven elo al dover shiyesh lo matirin. Pigul with all of these different severities attached to them, namely yidio achas, korbono kavua, lo hutar michlolo, pigul has relevance only to those kind of sacrificial elements that had a matir, something that came to allow them to be eaten or burnt on the mizbeach. Tuma, on the other hand, shehi b'shtei yedios. Tuma is a lesser severe type offense in the sense that one is not considered a tuma offender unless he is aware, he had been aware that he was tomei. There was an interim point that he forgot himself and he ate something of a sacrificial nature or went into the Beis HaMikdash and then became aware post facto of his tumah. That's shtei yedios, pre-awareness and post-awareness. That unless you have these two yedios, the offender will not be guilty of bringing a sacrifice for his tumah offense. What other leniency is there? The korbano oyle v'yored, a tuma offender, when he brings his atonement, his income level or his personal financial status is taken into a consideration. That's an element of leniency where we reckon with his income level. And therefore, if he can't afford an animal offering, he brings a bird offering, and if not that, you have a case where he could bring you can have a even less expensive meal offering. V'hutra michlola. The realm of tuma, which is a realm of prohibition, has an exception. For example, a korban tzibur, or Rashi's example is kigon pesach habo b'tuma, a korban pesach. If the tzibur is tame, it can be brought. It's brought anyway, even though the tzibur is tameh. Hutra michlola also has ramifications in general for korbanos tzibur, that we make an allowance. So that we have these leniencies, shtei yedios, korbanos oleh v'yored, and hutra michlola, by hutra michlola. And if by pigul, which we saw had restrictions associated with it, and yet it was limited to Dover Shiesha Matirin, Tumah, which has these leniencies associated with it, certainly it should be limited. Eino din shilei chayav elo al Dover Shiesha lo Matirin. Certainly it would not be considered an offense unless it was a Dover Shiesha lo Matirin. Is that so? Talmud Lomar. The Pasuk says, this is a Pasuk from Vayikra, Perichov Beis Pasuk Gimel. We've included the entire pasuk on the outside, on the inside margin of your Gemara, where it reads as follows. We'll first read the whole pasuk. It says, "Emor aleim ledorosechem kol ish asher yikrav mikol zarachem el kodashim asher yagdishu bnei Yisrael Hashem." This is an address to the Jewish people for all generations when you offer a sacrifice, the tumasoi olav, and he happens to be tomei, and then eats of the meat. There will be a kores penalty. So now the pasuk says, and more, we now go back to the source to see the answer to the suggestion that maybe Tuma is limited. So we say it's not. Talmud Lomar, Emor Aleim Odorosechem, Kol Isha She Yikrav Mikol Zarachem, V'chule. And we saw the V'chule said, Mikol Zarachem, El HaKodoshim Ashir Yagdishu Bnei Yisrael. B'chol HaKodoshim HaKosuv Medaber. The pasuk referring to Tuma applies to all Kodshim, whether Yesh Lehem Atirin or Ein Lehem Atirin. This is the answer to the original Minohani Mili that opened up this piece of Gemara, the very top line. We had asked, from where do you know that Tuma is something that applies to Dover Sheyesh Lo Matirin as well as Dover Shein Lo Matirin? You see that from this pasuk. Now another question. Yochol Yu Chayovin Alein Miyad? Rashi, across from here, says, Yochol, im hu davar sheyesh lo matirin. If you're dealing with a type of korban that has a matir for it, you chayovin olav mishum tumo miyad kodim sheyikrivu matirin. For example, if you have, what's an example of a korban sheyesh lo matirin? Well, all korbanos that have a zrikas hadam associated with them, or menachos that have a handful offered. So the meat of those korbanos that have zrikas hadam, or the shirayim, the balance of a meal offering that is eaten by the kohanim, will there be a tuma penalty even before the matir is offered? Let us say someone eats from the meat of sacrifices before the zrikas hadam, or eats from the shirayim of menachos before the handful is offered in the fire. Is there a tuma violation even at that early point in time? Talmud Lomar, Asher Yikrav. In the same pasuk that we read, we see this expression, Asher Yikrav. And Rebbe Elazar here is going to explain that. Omar Rebbe Elazar, V'chiyesh nogea shuchayov. The word Yikrav literally would mean someone who draws unto, someone who touches. But Rebbe Elazar says there's no precedent for a kores punishment, which is featured in this pasuk. There is no kores ever associated with touching. Therefore, in this pasuk asher yikrav, it can't have its literal meaning of touching. Ha ketzad. So, therefore, how are we to understand matters? As follows. Kol davar sheyesh lo matirin. Those kinds of sacrifices that have a matir. Those kinds of sacrifices, like we said, have a blood sprinkling, and the meat, therefore, is that which has the matir. The matir is the blood. The meal offerings, their matir is the koimetz. So all of those kind of sacrifices, enu chayov ad sheyikrivu matirin. There will be no tumah offense unless the matir was offered, the blood sprinkled, or the handful of meal offering placed in the fire. V'chol davar she'eino matirin, those kind of sacrifices that have no matir. In other words, all of those things that were featured in our most recent Mishnah. Eino chayov ad sheyikdash b'kli. There will be no tumah violation until they are sanctified in a service vessel. At that point, they become subject to a tumah violation. That concludes the second parak of Mi'ilah, and with that, we conclude our shiur for today.